If you enjoy The Spectator's podcast, why not subscribe to the magazine as well? You can get 12 weeks of The Spectator for just £12, plus a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher if you go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. This is a podcast-only deal, and we hope you take us up on it.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Kate Andrews, and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Heal. So a sentence that has been building for some time that I'm finally going to say is that Parliament has passed the Rwanda bill. James, tell us what's happened and tell us what happened leading up to this moment.
Yeah, so last week, government party managers were very kind of bullish that they were going to get the Rwanda bill finally into law after about 5-6 months of debate. And then actually, turns out they couldn't last week. And yesterday was then when they decided, no, this week we actually really mean it. We're going to get it through tonight. And there were sort of briefings around potentially Parliament sitting until 4 a.m. to get this through, part of ping pong. As it then transpired, it came down to two final amendments, Des Brown's amendment and Lord Anderson's amendment. Des Brown's amendment, the government threw a bit of concession on. This was to do with Afghan interpreters being given the right to stay here in the UK. And then on the second amendment, Lord Anderson's amendment, this was to set up an independent monitoring committee. And I think basically talking to some of the people in and around the whips and Parliament management operation, they were kind of, earlier in the evening, they were happy at how it was going. And then eventually it just came down to Anderson's amendment. And just before midnight, he threw in the towel. And then thereafter midnight, I think about 12:07, it became law and passed into law. And so I think that, you know, obviously there's lots of difficult challenges ahead. But you have to think, Kate, I think over this whole process where we were in November, December, you have people like Marc Francois and the Five Families saying the government should pull the bill, that it was unlikely to get through, etc. And so, yes, there's lots of challenges with the scheme. Yes, we could talk about the policy issues. But in terms of the whipping operation, I do think that over the past 18 months, for all the kind of Tory strife and all the blue on blue, the whipping operation has remained pretty solid. And so I think the final vote in the Commons was a majority of 44. So still quite impressive, even though, of course, that majority has dwindled due to scandal. So, yeah, a moment of a brief pride, respite. And then, of course, the key thing now is, will the scheme work and how does it work over the next couple of weeks to get those flights off the ground by July?
Katie, James just reminded us there about the ping pong that's happened with the House of Lords, with the courts. This has been a long time in the making for the government. And James says, you know, they'll take their moment of respite. It will be very short because there are huge questions about how this policy is going to work in practice. The Prime Minister has given himself until July to get a flight off the ground, taking economic refugees and asylum seekers to Rwanda. There are a lot of hurdles left to overcome.
Yes, and actually, in a way, this is the bit where the policy has to stand on its own feet. And I don't think the government's been particularly successful in blaming Labour and blaming peers, because I think it's just one of those things in politics, which is, you know, to quote Boris Johnson, when the herd turns, it feels as though, you know, the government can't win at the moment. And therefore, I think because Rishi Sunak does not look as though he's coming from a position of strength, the fact that this scheme has taken so long to become law looks more like a failure of the government than the failure of the Labour Party, you know, or the fault of the Labour Party, even though they have obviously repeatedly voted as they can to block it. Now we're at the point where it's, did Rishi Sunak's calculation pay off? Because if we go back to the early parliamentary rounds on this bill, that was when you had a situation whereby, there were Tory rebels because they said that this would not work. You have Robert Jenrick saying that. You had Suella Braverman saying that. You had the ERG meeting. It feels a long time away now because it's taken so much time to get here. But they were of the view that this was not the full fat version. Now, the One Nation group said it went a bit too far for them, but they'd live with it. But the critics on the right said that it would need to go further in terms of disapplying parts of human rights law in order to get this happening en masse. And it means, I think, we're actually heading to the most difficult point for this policy, which it could be. There are some flights and there's things to point to, but it is the point where actually Rishi Sunak's judgment is going to come into, I think, much more focus in terms of was he right to ignore those concerns? And what does success look like at this point? I mean, I was walking around Parliament this morning and I bumped into a Tory MP. I said, oh, you know, and he said, well, great night, we got the bill through. And I was like, great, now you just have to see if it works. And he said, of course it won't work. He said, you know, that's not the point, but we might get one or two flights over. So, you know, what are we judging success on? I think the government would take a handful of flights pre-election, with people on them. I think there's a question of how many you can go on in terms of individual appeals as a sign our scheme is working. And then, of course, were the Tories to somehow win re-election, there would be questions perhaps about how, you know, is the deterrent effect working? What do you do from that point? Because I think the critics will say, actually, there is a good chance they get flights off the ground. It's just that it's going to be so timely and consuming to get individuals on them. And how many will you get on per flight without individual appeals and so forth? So at that point, they might need to bring in new laws, new rules to fix those processes. But I think when they picked this, the strategy they embarked on, the policy in its final form, it was seen as probably the furthest they thought they could go while getting it through the Commons and through the Lords, while also being, you know, the closest they could get to getting flights off. And therefore, in a period of just, I think, a handful of flights would start to be seen as something they could talk about.
Hmm. James, what did you make of the Prime Minister's narrative this morning that this is a global issue? He clearly didn't want this to be seen as a UK-specific policy, but rather one that fits into a broader narrative, especially in Europe, about trying to create deterrence. And Katie makes an important point there about deterrence. I mean, if you look at the Spectator's data hub, the small boat crossings on the year to date are highest this year compared to 2023, 2022, certainly 2021 and 2020 for obvious reasons. 2024 has the highest number of boat crossings on the year to April. And these are people who are going to be well aware of what the UK government is talking about when it comes to its immigration plans, and they're coming anyway.
I think there's two reasons. There's expectation management and there's party politics too. So I think what was striking yesterday, Rishi Sunak's press conference yesterday, was the way in which he kept emphasising how complex this was as a challenge. And so, of course, the tacit admission from that is that this is not going to be the silver bullet, perhaps, that Rwanda was presented was 2 years ago. And I think that what's striking, particularly since Suella Braverman was replaced at the Home Office by James Cleverly, the way in which is this has been only such as one of the different measures being taken. I think the danger is when it comes to expectations, sometimes the Prime Minister, of course, has to say, yes, we'll stop the boats. But I mean, does anyone seriously think every single one of those boat crossings is going to be stopped? Even within government, there's a, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find anyone who completely thinks that you can't stop someone. I mean, you can get rid of them, obviously, but I think that no, it won't be 100% deterrent. So that's the first thing. The second thing I think by emphasize, so that's why you make it a whole thing, a European wide issue, because you say, look, guys, you know, this is a huge existential issue. You could talk about climate change, for instance. You could talk about the pressures of the Middle East pushing people into Europe to emphasize that it's not because of a unique British failing. This is a whole European wide continental problem. The second thing is party politics. And of course, Labour like to say, oh, yes, we'll do the gangs. Well, that's what the Conservatives are saying. But we'll also have this new, shiny new migration deal with Europe. And from the UK's point of view, the Tories' point of view, it makes sense to say, actually, look, Europe was up last year. 2023's figures were higher than 2022. In the UK, they were down. Therefore, given that Europe, places like Italy, for instance, under Meloni, you know, a hard-right conservative leader, are experiencing massive migration, are they really going to allow us to do a deal with the UK that doesn't involve the UK taking more EU migrants? Because Europe's got it worse than us. So as I say, it's a point by saying it's about expectation management and also trying to shoot Labour's fox on this by suggesting that this EU deal would only involve more people coming to the UK rather than the UK sending asylum seekers abroad.
But also I think that if you look across Europe, you know, the Rwanda scheme is often talked about Labour as this outlier, incredibly cruel, inhumane, suggesting that the UK government has no respect for the rule of law. But it does feel as though increasingly other European countries are looking at similar schemes to the Rwanda policy. And I don't think that was the case 2 years ago. But, you know, you had the European Commission chief 1 month ago, Ursula von der Leyen, giving her support to the idea of migration reforms that would involve deporting people to third countries for asylum processing. So I think as you start to see countries further grappling with this and there not being really any easy solutions to it, Rishi Sunak probably does have a bit of a cover that in that sense, and hence why he loves, you know, bigging up his friendship to Meloni in Italy and, you know, trying to show there is kind of the sense that it's not just the UK as an outlier at the moment. I think there's a question though, which is almost, and I don't want this to sound too gushing, but, you know, is Rishi Sunak ahead of his time? By which I mean, do you have a situation where probably rewriting some human rights treaties, perhaps leaving the ECHR is the trajectory that lots of countries are on, and potentially there's going to be an agreement on it, but it's just not something that is going to happen between the time of now and the next election.
Katie, you had a very interesting blog on Coffee House yesterday talking about the potential or even the merits of a summer election versus an autumn election, which is what many people have been expecting. one of the plus sides of an autumn election is that it might give the chancellor another opportunity to offer up another kind of tax cut or fiscal giveaway. Although the numbers this morning aren't very rosy on that, we found out that the provisional borrowing figures for the last financial year were about £120 billion. Now, that's £7.6 billion down from the same 12-month period a year previous, but it's £6.6 billion more than was forecast by the Office for Budget Responsibility, meaning that the UK is overspending, overborrowing from what the expectations were from the OBR for this last financial year. That would suggest that the Chancellor has more of a limited scope to offer up another tax cut. Jeremy Hunt has suggested that if he were to offer up another tax cut, it would be the less expensive version of an income tax cut. That is to say, he'd keep chipping away at national insurance. But how does this relate to the election question, Katie? I mean, if one of the positives for waiting to the autumn is that you get another round of tax cuts, but maybe you can't offer those tax cuts, does that put more weight on the summer?
I think it does. I mean, I don't think any final decision has been made in government. I think that, you know, one of the advantages the government has, particularly with no fixed term Parliament Act anymore, is the ability to pick the date and to try and surprise the opposition. There mightn't be that much of a surprise, given that I think Labour have been planning for some time. But even, you know, the day you pick it and the day you announce it can set the tone for the campaign. So there's control in that in a way that opposition don't have, even if they are able to work around most times. I think that what the figures today show, and this idea that, you know, is reducing the scope for more pre-election tax cuts, and there's a story in the FT, which I think sounds about right, about how Jeremy Hunt would like to take another 2p off national insurance if he can. Now, I think he would like to. I think someone in his party would say, why do we keep doing this when it's not getting us where we want to in the polls? But there's clearly an appetite if there's space in government to do something. But if you don't think there's going to be the headroom, then it starts to probably put the weight back, and I think starts to mean more people ask the question, do we have enough reason to believe that things will be better? Will it be enough to point to that will outweigh some of the reasons we might go earlier? And if it starts to feel as though autumn, for various reasons, is not going to provide some of the comforts or the pluses they thought it would, then it naturally just means you're going to have some people saying, well, should we just give it a go? If we don't think we can necessarily going to have that, should we just go to the polls before the summer and have at it?
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.